Wonderful. Thank you so much. Welcome everyone to LH1 Live for October 2024. The year is flying by. I'm not sure if everyone else is feeling the same heat that I'm feeling in Denver, Colorado, but it doesn't really feel like October. It kind of feels like June. So it's weird to say October as I'm sitting here in shorts and a tank top. But regardless, we are here and the days just kind of keep flying by, which is kind of crazy, but really excited to be here. We have a fantastic call again for you this evening, and so I'm really excited to kind of dive right in. A couple of housekeeping things, just as a heads up. If you're new to this call, I'll kind of break down what we do and kind of why we're here. So this call actually started, gosh, over 10 years ago, with some wonderful co-hosts of mine, both Annie Marks and Maria Johnson, and were kind of the founding members that helped me kind of kick off this call 10 years ago. And where it came from was that we all went to conference back in 2014, I believe. And actually, Annie normally does this story. I normally don't. And so we kind of had this epiphany that it'd be so great to be able to come together more consistently beyond conference. And so we created LH1 Live. And the biggest goal really is just been able to kind of come together, whether you're brand new to the LH1 family and we're happy to have you and excited to be able to share our information with you, or you've had LH1 for gosh, for so long and you can be able to kind of share tips and tricks, but also just kind of we share what goes on in our daily lives and kind of what goes on. And it really does help when we all pull together, and it's such a great community here. So the things that we really try to avoid and kind of to not talk about is obviously like anything that would probably require someone of like expertise. So any like legal guidance or anything like that. We do talk about clinical trials, but we do talk about that more when the recording has been turned off, which is after the first hour. But anything else, employment, there's oftentimes when some conversations are best for experts of that sort versus here. Sorry to hear myself with a quick echo. If I do feel like the conversation is more appropriate for an expert, I will kind of chime in. So please don't take that as disrespectful. I just want to make sure that we're having those conversations in the best spots possible. Without further ado, I do want to kind of break down. So there's a ton of great calls coming up in October. So I'll kind of talk about the calls that are happening and then we will kickstart the call. So give me 2 seconds. All right. So in case you missed it, there was actually a call yesterday, and it was the teens call. So if you have an affected teen or young adult, definitely keep your eye out because those calls happen every so often, and they are fantastic. So know the teens call happened yesterday, and it was so cool. All right, so LH1 Live here today, and then the next call after that is LH1 Affected Young Adults. So there it is, and that call is on Tuesday, October 8th at 5 p.m. Pacific. Next call after that is Dads of LHON Kids. And we have kids in parentheses since you're always a kid. My mom says that too, no matter what. So all dads are welcome. So that's a great call. And that's actually, fun fact, that's our longest call we've ever had. It actually beats LHON Live. And that call is actually on Wednesday, October 16th at 5 p.m. Pacific. Next call after that is the LHON Sisterhood call. This call is super fun. It's absolute blast. So sisterhood is how it's defined as anyone that carries the mutation. So it's both affected women with LHON, but also carriers. So just kind of a really great spot for us all to come together. And this call is different. This will be on a Saturday. It's Saturday, October 19th at 9 a.m. Pacific. So definitely check out that new time. We'll have new times here and there. So just to kind of change it up. Next call is LHON and entrepreneurship. And what's really cool about this call is actually there was an entrepreneur that came to this year's conference, and he was saying, you know, it would be really great if we all could pull together. There's a lot we can learn from each other. So he's actually kicking off this call. So if this is something of interest to you, please join. It'll be great. And this is on Monday, October 21st at 5 p.m. Pacific. Next call is LHON Onset After 60. And that call is on Wednesday, October 23rd at 5 p.m. Pacific. Next call is LHON Assistive Technology. And that call is on Monday, October 28th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And that is a wrap for October. So if you heard any calls that are of interest to you, please join them. It's the exact same number you got to call into here today. So same place. Sounds like all the same time. So pretty great. But That's all of our housekeeping for the call, but just want again a quick reminder that I won't be muting people. So if you are in a noisy area or eating dinner or anything like that, please make sure to put yourself on mute so that way you can unmute when you want to jump into the conversation. But without further ado, I'm really excited to introduce to you, gosh, someone that's been part of our community for so long and such a great asset as he leads the employment call for that happens quarterly. So I wanted to introduce to you Zach Turner. Zach is just, he's such a blast to hang out with on a call. And there's so much that I'm excited for him to be able to share with you. So Zach, without further ado, can you jump in and kind of introduce yourself and share how you're part of the community?
Awesome. Thank you, Jessica. Glad to be part of this call. So first off, Zach, I'm from New Jersey, but I live in Brooklyn, New York now. So I know there's a lot of West Coast, East Coast. I do represent New York on the call today. I've had LHON been affected since, gosh, 2016, 17. That's when I was first affected. I've been to a few conferences and super excited to join this call because I've met a lot of good contacts and people from the conferences. I do host a LHON employment call. We have four calls throughout the year. We have one more coming up later this year. A lot of good conversation. We talk about everything from employment, interviewing, what type of jobs people are doing, networking, assistive technology while working, anything that is related to employment. Super excited. It's passionate to me. I'm a healthcare recruiter, so help people here in New York City with their employment and career opportunities. I'm also very passionate about adaptive sports. I've tried a handful. One of my favorites is beat baseball. I've been playing that now for about 6 years now. Travel across the country playing adaptive sports, and I've run with Achilles and you name it. I have a ton of connections here within the LHON group. I love these calls, love the community, and super excited to be part of this group tonight and with Jessica. Yeah.
This hiding mute button, so tricky. That's awesome. Thanks so much, Jack. Wait, you didn't talk about your cute baby and your cute dog,
That
your
is
wonderful
true.
wife.
My
What?
wife Allison, we actually met before I was affected. And then we got married in 2019, and we actually just had our first son in 2022. So he's two and a half, keeping us busy, keeping us entertained. Every day is just absolutely fun with him. And been on this journey now with Allison since 2016 as well.
So cool. I think it's so great. You bring so many cool aspects to our LHON community. I mean, employment, but also being on the other side with recruiting and then an LHON dad. And then, gosh, I remember when I first got my dog, I called you and I was like, how do you find your dog's poop? So just so many different perspectives, which is so awesome. I mean, just to kind of like anything fun to share, like, gosh, walk us through like beat baseball. What is beat baseball, or kind of give us a tip or tricks on recruiting? I'll take any sort of tidbit like that.
So beat baseball. So I've tried goal ball, beat baseball, run with Achilles, bike with in tandem. But beat baseball is one of the cooler ones. It's a team sport. We have people on our teams with all different eye conditions. I've actually recruited a few LHON people on our New Jersey team now, which I'm super proud of. And throughout the country, there's about 20 teams, and there's LHON people on a variety of teams. We're all blindfolded, so whether you have absolutely zero vision or you're visually impaired of different levels, we're all in the same playing field, travel across the country, compete, met a lot of cool people outside the sport, made a lot of cool connections, and some of them are my close friends to this day. Super competitive, but also after a game, we all kind of shake hands and go out to eat and get to know each other. I've found out a lot about different employment opportunities through beat baseball, what people are doing, and so forth. So if
What's the
anyone
age
ever has
range?
any questions about it, I'm an open book, love talking about it.
Zach, what's the age range like? How like of your team?
So we have someone who started when they were 12,
What?
and then one of our better players, he's actually 62 now. He's actually a former NFL player. He's on our team. So anywhere from 12 to 62, I'd say the median, average age is like, 20s to 40s. But it's cool. We have a wide variety of players on our team. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. I think that's probably one of the coolest things about just getting into adaptive sports, but I feel like I could talk about adaptive sports all day long, so they probably should cut us off. But it's just, and also being in different environments where, in communities where the age range is so broad. Like my next door neighbor, who I absolutely love, she's, I don't know, 70 something. And I probably talk to her more than I talk to most people in my building. And so it's just so nice to have that diversity, and you learn so much more, and the experience is way better.
Totally, totally agree. Yeah, and then in terms of like my employment, I was working my job when I had 2020. I was driving, and then I was affected, stopped driving. I probably thought similar to a lot of people. I was like, how am I gonna continue working? What am I gonna do? Kind of was lost for a little bit, and still in that same employment, just use different technology, different adaptive stuff. Figured out how to use public transit, just getting around, mobility, and I'm very comfortable in my job right now too, which is great. Obviously, every job has its tough days, but yeah, love my job recruiting. It's a lot of just talking to people, which is great. Yeah.
Now, are you remote or are you in office?
We are actually in the office 2 to 3 days a week now. Live in Brooklyn, work in Manhattan. New York, I'd say, is one of the top cities in terms of public transit and accessibility. So I'm blessed because of that. But yeah, I'm in the office 2 to 3 days.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that's really fun.
Yeah.
And like just kind of chatting with your family, are you the only one affected?
I am. I do have a younger sister. She's not affected. And my mom was an only child. So when this all happened, it was kind of all new to us, learning a
Totally.
ton, which is really cool. My dad's cousin, who actually spoke at a conference a couple years ago, she is actually a neuro-ophthalmologist, and she was a great resource at the time, still is, still bounce ideas off of her. But yeah, I'm the only one affected right now.
Oh my gosh, I keep forgetting about this cool connection. Okay, so shout out. So anyone that came to the Phoenix conference, Zach's, did you tell me aunt? Yeah. Was the neuro-ophthalmologist. And she was wonderful. And so as she was presenting, there was actually pictures of you, Zach, the whole time, of her like doing an exam or whatever it was. So it was really cool that we're like, we know that guy. That's awesome. Given we couldn't see the pictures, but we just knew it was you the whole process.
Yeah, it's too funny. Small world.
It's so crazy when the world like that is small, when you're like starting to like, whether it's a family member or you start connecting the dots of like just getting involved in organizations and things, the world, our LH1 world becomes super small and really, really connected, which is pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Especially when people start to know other people, like you probably have that between, I mean, does your worlds collide between beat baseball and recruiting?
Not so much yet, but what's really cool is someone in Long Island, his name's John. He started playing beat baseball. He was on a call. I got introduced to him somehow, when he was first affected, and he has since found employment, not because of me, but a connection he made through beat baseball, and he started working, through the BEP program, Business Enterprise Program through the state, and which is really cool. He got on, employment, and it's just some of the cool things, connections you make through these calls or just the community itself. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. Another like shameless plug for the employment call. I mean, there's obviously, as you guys heard me read earlier, there are so many calls. And honestly, like one of our ultimate goals of having that many calls is really because if you feel more comfortable in a certain call or have a specific question, it makes it so easy to jump into one of those calls. So when I have an employment question, like why is my magnifier keep resetting to a small window on the corner? I know I'm going to go to the assistive technology call later this month. And ask why I have to restart my computer every single time it does that, because that's annoying. But it's also like the connections and being able to network. I remember being on an employment call, and this was like months ago, but Someone was actually asking various like interview questions. Well, they had Zach on the call, a recruiter, and then another person on the call was a HR person. So it was really cool that we had like kind of so many different aspects and perspectives. So we were almost doing like a faux interview of like, here's some questions that might be great to ask. Have you considered this? And gosh, I'm not looking for a job, but you left equipped with like different resources and different connections just by having that those hearing those conversations on these calls. So it was really cool.
Yeah, I think we did like a mock interview, and then he joined one of the next calls, and he's like, "Hey, just so you guys know, I crushed those interviews. I took all of
Sweet.
them.
Yeah,
Every
it's
one of
really
them."
cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and I mean it's we're not just sitting here shamelessly plugging the employment calls. I feel like this sort of connection and really happens in so many of the other calls. Just being able to learn that information and come back and be like, you guys, that was awesome. I learned something. I was able to kind of and just to kind of make that step in like anyone's life a little bit easier for the next person as we kind of trek through this LH1 vision together. That's obviously the ultimate goal. Speaking of making lives better, like Zach, what's one of your favorite like tips or tricks you've heard just kind of being almost a veteran LH1 person? What's anything that you're like, this has been amazing?
So it took me a long time to like speak up and like tell people I was visually impaired. I remember I used to like go to coffee shops or something and just try and get by or like ask for help and not use my cane. I think the biggest thing is when I'm going somewhere new to be open. I was actually talking to Alyssa about this beforehand, like just being upfront and just telling someone I'm visually impaired, you know, whether I'm using my cane or not, it's in my hand or I'm using it. It goes such a long way. So it took me a long time, probably like a year, 2 years before I started just being upfront telling people, hey, I need some assistance. I'm visually impaired. This is what's going on. And more people were open to it and curious and asking questions. That's always like when someone calls me and they're first affected and they're like, hey, any suggestions? I always say like being as open, as possible. And people are so interested, curious, in asking questions, finding out more about it, wanting to help. I always say that's the biggest thing. Outside of some of the technology things, you know, Windows Zoom and stuff like that. But I always suggest that to everyone because it took me like 2 years to do that. And I love doing it everywhere I go now.
So true. It's a really hard thing though. It's really hard to like, and when you say long time, I was thinking like, I don't know, I was thinking way longer when you said years. I feel like 1 year was fast. I think it's really hard. I would say it's personal for everyone, but it is such a hard journey to like have that cane and own it. I was just at a conference this past week and, yeah, took my cane, went everywhere because I was in a brand new city. Everything was brand new. So as I was kind of walking through, but when I went to the conference, I was like, is there any way that someone could walk me around in kind of at least 5 minutes, tell me which rooms are which rooms, just so I'll have that understanding. And they like looked at me like, yeah, absolutely, of course. Like I was asking for, I don't know, something so simple. And it was so funny to get the opposite reaction, like, because I feel like most of the time when we're asking something from someone, we expect it to be a burden. Like, we're so sorry. Hey, is there any way you can help? But when I asked that, they're like, yeah, of course. Like, of course we can show you where like all these rooms are in the bathroom, but do you want to know where the snacks are too? And I'm like, yes, please.
Of
And
course.
so, yeah. So as we're kind of going through all of it, I felt so well equipped to be able to do everything I needed to do and everything I wanted to do that week. And it was such a difference because I was, and I still, when they finished the tour, I was like, thank you so much. I feel comfortable, like, and know exactly what I need to do. And they were like, you should always feel this way. And I'm like, it's tricky. It's so true, but it's so hard to actually get to that point. And it was really cool to kind of feel that comfort level and for people to feel like this is like everything you're asking for is so simple. Of course we can do this. And so I kind of forget that sometimes that it's something that we're asking is probably so simple.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, the being comfortable. I travel, you know, a lot with Allison and, you know, she's a great resource for me, but I also will travel by myself. And I always get like this little stress or nervousness when I travel by myself, going somewhere new. Like, how am I going to figure this out? And before you know it, it's like, you know, a few hours and, you know, same thing. I get lay the land, muscle memory, walk around, get comfortable. And then I'm like, okay, I know this area. I know this city really well now and know the hotel. And before you know it, you're comfortable. And it's like you knew the city, you know, for a while now. And that comfortable feeling is something that, you know, obviously everyone wants to feel. And you know, like you said, just ask for help and people are more than willing to.
Oh, totally. Like when I was sitting on the plane, the guy asked me like, "Hey, can I ask you what you can see?" And I was like, "Oh yeah." So we just kind of like chatted. And so we landed and he's like, "So where are you going?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to the train because I'm going to head home." He's like, "I have 4 hour layover." And he was probably like a guy my dad's age. He's like, "I have 4 hours of layover. Do you mind if I walk you to the train?" And you should have seen, it was honestly, it was the cutest thing. He like walked me. So yeah, he's probably in his like mid-70s. He walks me to the train and it was, I don't know if you guys have been to Denver Airport. It's insane. So yeah, it was a good 25-minute walk from the gate all the way to the train. We went to the elevators and everything. But like once I got on the train, I feel like he like held his hand onto my shoulder until like the doors closed, like, "You're gonna do great." And it was so sweet. It was just, there was just, I think like, I don't know, there's so much crazy in the world and like it's so nice to feel like there's so much kindness too, that it's so easy to forget that sometimes the world's crazy, but look at like that was the kindest thing and it was so sweet to now talk about it days later.
Such a cool story.
I know, right? I'm like a sweet guy, but oh, awesome. All right. Well, I do want to open it up. It's kind of perfect time. We want to open it up and if anyone has any questions, they want to throw past Zach or kind of talk about we've got a great group of people on this call tonight. And just yeah, wanted to open up and see if anyone has anything.
Zach, great from here for you and everything, and it's awesome. And yeah, getting comfortable. I was affected in 2021. And probably this past 6 months to a year, what I've learned when I've gone out, I never leave the property. I'm comfortable around my own house, getting around outside and in, without my walking, my white cane. And I'd use it anywhere else. If I go to a restaurant someplace, first thing I'll do is my first walk, you know, where the restrooms and everything, make a mental map. That's what I use, you know, like some muscle memory, mental mapping. And once I have it ingrained, and it's a great feeling to be independent and get around. So I'll try to get around much as I can in my own. To build up that confidence and trust my, you know, my peripheral vision and things like that. But yeah, letting people know is I'm way past that, and it's a great feeling. And there is a lot of sweet and kind, gentle people out there.
Absolutely. Is that and who's this speaking again?
Oh, sorry, Lorenzo from
Lorenzo.
Connecticut.
Yeah, you're from Wilton. I lived in Fairfield Trumbull for
Oh
like
God,
10 years.
yeah.
Yep.
Stone throw away.
Yeah. No, very cool. Thanks for sharing. I love your input. Yeah.
Hey Zach, do you know the date for the next employment call?
Yeah, we have one more. It's the end of the year. I will get that and throw it in the chat, the exact date. I don't want to give you the wrong date off the top of my head, but I'll put that in the chat. And there is a Facebook page, LHON Navigating Employment, as well, where the call list is posted there. But we have 4 year, one more this year.
I
Oh, nice.
found
Thank
it.
you.
Wednesday, November 13.
Awesome. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Yep.
Same time.
Cool.
Yep.
And I'll do one more shameless plug for the employment call. It's literally every job and all jobs. So if you're looking for whatever it is, it like we talked about it. So if you can think of every range, so don't think like, "Oh, this doesn't apply for me." Like if you're looking for a job and it's any job, like come on in. Like it's super open like that.
Absolutely. We've had parents of individuals who their kids are graduating college. We've had a doctor on the call, engineer. We've had someone who's looking for a job and didn't know where to go and just bounce ideas. It's kind of like a mini networking group, which is really cool.
Avalanche forecaster, actor, it's a wide range.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah, I'm just starting to look right now, so that's gonna be cool. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Anyone else have any tips, tricks, stories I want to share? It's
I
definitely the
guess,
perfect spot.
sorry, I guess back to this is Chris from Long Beach. Just back to asking for help. I may have said this on the last call, but I started with Chris Lawton from up in San Francisco. We were talking at the hotel bar at the Cleveland conference, and talking about, like, it's like our moods are almost better than they were before getting there, because you realize how nice people are, because you have to ask for help a lot more. And we were talking about the importance of using honey instead of vinegar. Like Chris was saying at first, you just go out to people when you first got this. You'd be like, oh, I can't see. I need help. Instead of just being, oh, excuse me, I have this. Can you please? And people are a lot more receptive that way. So
I love that. Yeah, it's so funny. I jump in and try and talk to everyone possible now, more than probably mm-hmm. prior. And my wife's like, you don't have to talk to everyone and tell them about your like joking. But like you said, I love the honey versus vinegar. Good analogy.
I love that. Oh. No, go ahead.
Oh, is it Tim here from Charlotte? So you guys had, I was about to say you had a kid. You did nothing. You guys had a kid, is it a couple years ago, you said?
Yeah, in 2022. So he's about 2.5 now.
And how was that time? I guess you could relate it in general. I mean, Brooklyn, I don't know. Did she drive herself? I don't know what you do in Brooklyn. Taxi, how was the whole scenario? How are things going?
Yeah, so I'll Uber, take the subway or the bus. My wife does have a car. Try and only move it when it's alternate side parking days. But so, I mean, in 2022, I mean, we knew we wanted to have kids, but I was really nervous. I was like, how am I going to change his diaper, clean him, feed him, cook, all that stuff? And I feel like, you know, before I knew it, I was a pro at it all. And it's kind of like anything, starting anything new, whether you're visually impaired or not, it's like you're kind of nervous how to figure it out. And you just find a way. But what's good is everything's pretty accessible, walkable, but I still do rely on Ubers or subways and buses around here. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I was like, ooh, I was like, more parenting question follow up, like daycare. Do you take baby to daycare, or how does that all work?
Yeah, so not yet. We're actually looking at starting something part time. Allison's staying home with him right now. We kind of weighed our options, and daycare in New York City is just ridiculously expensive. So she's staying home watching Bryce and while I work. And we're going to look at part time, and then in September, he could start like 3K preschool, which will be cool.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
One more shameless plug, that there is actually a parenting call. So if that's any of interest to anybody, that's actually also in November. So that'll be coming up, hosted by two awesome parents but kids of all ages, but there's that call also too, is open to everybody. There's even people that are kind of maybe thinking about having kids that have joined that call, and grandparents too. So super cool.
Yeah. I suggest connecting with people, even if you're thinking about, I connected with Chaz Quinn. He's out in Kansas City, and he was a great resource for me. I remember before I had Bryce, I was like, how do you do this? How do you do this? He's like, don't worry, you're going to figure it out. And he was a great resource for me before I became a parent. So I suggest just connecting with people who recently went through it. Yeah.
That's a great idea. So that call's in November?
November 12th. It's the day before the employment call.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully you'll be a grandparent another year or so. And yeah, thinking about that already. I used to take care of my kid brother who's over here this evening, and I was a junior in high school and he was born. So learn how to change diapers then.
There you go. Congrats on becoming a grandparent soon.
Well, hoping to be one.
Hoping. Sometimes you're more involved than the parents are at times. So
yeah, I'm learning, going back to begging into my wood shop and learning how to use my tools and things again. And looking forward to building a rocking horse, which I used to do years ago. So,
and we specifically created that call as parenting with LHON, not like parents, you know, who have LHON, because we wanted to be inclusive of grandparenting or people who are helping people who are parents of, or whatever the relationship is, just the general topic. Like last time we had Bo Barley on, who, if a lot of you know Bo, I don't think he's on here tonight, but he happens to be a doctor and is affected and is a parent. And he was just like allaying everybody's concerns, you know, like, it was great. It's just, an amazing resource to hear a doctor who's affected tell you it's really okay. You can do this.
Cool.
I mean, it's more about smells and feeling things anyway. I mean, I got a 3-year-old and I suppose I was affected in 2 years ago. So I do remember changing diapers and all that beforehand, what little I did. But now I can't see the blue line on my little girl's diaper, but, you know, pretty much you can feel and smell it.
It's full, right?
It's full. And now, I mean, one of the best, you know, my wife always read to them, read to both of them, especially my older one who's 5. And it's it's obviously is a joy. Like, I assume to any parent when he's reading and certainly letters, numbers, but he is reading well. And so, you know, I remember, I forget who said it. It might've been at the last conference. Someone was saying how their kid was so much better at reading than his age because, you know, yeah, he has his son read to him. And that's something that inspires me. I would like to, you know, hopefully, you know, instill that. But yeah, when they started reading or identifying things for me, I was like, both like very appreciative, you know, heartwarming, but then also like, ooh, this is going to be nice. Like, and, you know, what can I gain out of this in my life? I have another stagehand. So, yeah, man.
Another resource. Yeah. That's awesome. Go. Anyone yes. else? Questions or want to share anything?
No, if everyone's in the area in Fairfield County, Connecticut, our band's got 3 shows this month, one this Saturday, the following week, and the end of the month. Some pop, rock, and country songs.
And what instrument do you play, Lorenzo?
Myself, the electric bass.
Very cool.
Yeah. Actually, I think I'm playing it better now than I did a couple of years ago. Seriously. But it's fun and, yeah, it's a good thing. Good vibe.
I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
So the employment call and the entrepreneur call, I mean, is the entrepreneur call, I guess, more centric to starting a business, being, you know, basically given challenges you have to encounter now, you know, from lots of different aspects? I guess I'm trying to figure out which call to get on, maybe both. I don't really know.
I'm going to say go for both, but it kind of, so the entrepreneur call, it's the first call. And I'll say the person that's actually hosting that call is an entrepreneur himself in the financial field. But a lot of it to me, and I'll give you my definition of like what, based on what we had talked about. And that was more of like starting your own business. So whatever kind of industry that's in, but being your own boss, kind of having, I think one of the things he had mentioned was talking through accommodations. Well, you don't have to talk through accommodations. You're your own boss. So like, how does that, where's the pros and cons? What are kind of the things that you should think through and think about differently with it when you kind of fly in solo as you're leading the company and as that company grows?
That's the avenue that I'll be going, but
perfect.
You know, even if it's just hearing other people's, you know, pros and cons and struggles and you know, wins in regards to navigating the workplace, I think would just be all the better.
Yeah. Just on that, not because I host it, but, just based off what you're saying, I say jump on both, see what you get from either. The navigating employment kind of talks about, you know, everything from interviewing to what types of jobs people are doing, what technology they use in their current jobs. So kind of everything from navigating from getting a job to working, anything in between. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
It's a great time too. I will kind of share that in a few minutes. We will turn off the recording. So if anyone wants to ask a question, not being recorded, totally welcome there too.
Hi.
Yeah, oh, hi. Jessica, you've got someone with a hand raised. Yeah, go ahead.
Perfect. Yes.
I'm new to Zoom in a way, so I hope I'm doing this right. I'm from Tasmania, everybody. Just want to say, and that's a little island down on the bottom of Australia, if no one knows. We actually have the largest family that goes back generations in Australia down here in Tasmania with Lon. Excuse my cat, go away. My great auntie back in like 1977 passed away with it, and my first cousin 4 years ago was legally blind. My sister and myself are carriers, and I have MS. So it's all sort of linking in. I'm just in the process of researching and seeing exactly what's installed, sort of, so to speak, especially with my MS as well. And my sister's just got diagnosed fibromyalgia, which may not be that. It could just be the lookalike MS to do with Lon. We don't know yet. But, yeah, hi, everyone. Yeah, so I'm new and I'm researching and I'm trying to find out things.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to the family. Did you say longest or largest family?
Largest.
Oh, largest. Wow. So how many people in your family are affected?
Well, my, going back like five generations, then you have all the branches, and they had lots of children back then, I might add. But so we're going back as far as like early 1800s, and then moving forward, there's a awful lot of families branching off the maternal great-grandmothers all the way along. And it's just, I actually don't know the numbers yet. It would be, it's phenomenal, really. There is a lot of branches with like 10 children, three quarters of them females type thing that are just branching, and then they keep branching, of course. And yeah, I think at the moment it looks sort of never ending, it sort of type thing, but a lot of numbers it would be, a lot of branches. I've got a few copies of Family Tree. I went as far back as my probably fourth great, 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 great grandmother. And the branches coming off that, I would say would probably, you'd be looking at like 80 people, 100.
Wow.
That's wow. Just a real glance. But yeah, it is up there. It's huge.
That's incredible. Just to have all that history, I mean, just like Zach, who's on the call that doesn't have any family history, and you to have such extensive family history is incredible. You probably are the expert here.
I was going to say, this is Melissa. She's, for anyone that was on the virtual conference that we did in 21, I think it was, we had Isabel Lopez Sanchez give a talk. And she's in Australia now, and she has been collaborating with David Mackey. And David Mackey, like 30 years ago, did the work that Michelle is telling us about now, where he was in Tasmania and he researched her family and others going back so many generations and published all this research. And then 30 years later, his team in Australia has been maintaining it. And I mean, so it's amazing how they've got all this data, and like they've got Taz 1, they've named the different families, Taz 1, Taz 2, Taz 3, and they've just identified all the people who were carriers, affected, unaffected. And it was that research that has been really helpful in recalibrating what the percentage risk is, because like most of the medical literature says that an unaffected male carrier has a 50% chance of becoming affected, but that's based on really old data. And the work that David Mackey and Isabel Lopez Sanchez and Lisa Cairns did on Michelle's family and others in Tasmania and all of Australia is so comprehensive that it shows that really the risk for a male is more like 17%, not 50, which is significantly different. And it's that kind of detailed work that was done on her family and others that goes back decades and decades of research. It's really exciting.
and scary. Exciting and scary. It is actually exciting as I start finding out more, but yeah, scary too.
Welcome. Thanks for sharing. That's amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll keep you on our prayers. Hang in there. And
yeah.
Here for you.
I do know my mother and her siblings, nothing was never spoke about, and they may not have even known. My mother passed in 2010, but there was a lot of glaucoma and different eye problems with them throughout their life. And my brother, who's passed with prostate cancer, but he had eye problems. Yeah, and I've got a couple nephews just starting to, so I'll have a word with them to get them tested and so forth, so we can get onto it early. It's always great to see to see all your stories and so forth, though, and it's really and that you can just get on with life and it's all good and hopefully, but it's really nice to and good to see all your stories and so forth. So thanks for listening to me.
Of course, thanks for sharing.
Not at all.
Yeah, please come join us again and invite the family. We'd love to have them.
Yeah, thank you.
Has anything prevented the help for the MS because of LHON? Medications or anything like that?
I'm yet to
actually. Don't mind me asking, I'm sorry.
Sorry? Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm yet to. I'm just in the process of emailing my neurologist and seeing if she knows anything at all. We've never spoke about it before. The last appointment I actually did have with her, I knew that I was a carrier, but I didn't know anything about it. So I did tell her, and nothing's come about. I'm on a infusion, Ocrevus, every 6 months, and that I know at the time of COVID out there for us all, was a medication that COVID didn't like at all, so I had to be extremely careful and so forth. So yeah, I don't know. I'm about to, like I said, I'm just in the process of emailing right now to my neurologist, and I'm going to bring my MRI forward, which was in December anyway, but it was only on the brain, but I'll do it on the spine and the brain and so forth. So yeah, work in progress at the moment to see what it medication wise and if it will affect it even more. I am secondary progressive MS, so it's always going to decline and deteriorate.
Michelle, it's Liz again. I would just say that, I mean, obviously you're doing the right thing, discussing all of it with your neurologist and getting your doctor's opinion on the whole thing. I would say that we have had a few gatherings of the very small number of folks that we have who happen to have LHON and MS together. It's a really small group, but it's a really good group. I know you joined it, and we haven't had a call yet since you joined, but I do know several.
Yeah, I'll do that today too.
Yeah, and some of the people in that group do take Ocrevus. I've heard them mention that medication, so they have not said it's not contraindicated. It's not a problem from what they've said. Of course, talk to your own doctor, but at least I've heard it said by people who happen to have LH and happen to have LH1 and happen to have MS that they aren't problematic one with the other, from what I've heard in that group. But again, up to your own doctor.
Yeah, I left a message on the group page, but yeah, I'll give them a call today.
Yeah, good.
Cool.
And I just one last thing before I go. Lisa has been messaging me a little bit in the last few days when it all came about even more in my research. And thank you so much. She's great. Yeah. So thank you. And good luck, everyone. Bye. I'll be quiet now.
No, thanks so much for speaking out. Thanks for stopping in. It's fantastic. Who else is on the call? Wants to share a story? Love to hear it.
Hi, I could share a bit of a story. My name's Elliot. I've met some of you. I went to the conference this year. I'm 25 years old and kind of bouncing between Seattle and the East Bay area right now. I was just diagnosed in May this year with 14484 after starting symptoms in April. And I guess I can kind of share like a success story in a way, although it's a little weird because I feel like a success story might, you know, what can it do? It can inspire people, but there's nothing. I feel like I just got lucky basically so far. So I don't know the real purpose, but basically a couple months ago, I was at like 20 over 125 vision, pretty small blurry spots, scotomas, but I expected it to get worse. But in the past couple months, it's kind of reversed a decent amount. And more recently, I'm finding that especially at night, like deep into the night, well past sunset, when there's really small amount of glare, I can see surprisingly well. I read like this Trader Joe's pasta packaging that had like 6-point fonts on it the other day, and that was feeling like a big success. So I think I've gotten quite lucky here, just to have 14484, which I've heard is like the more favorable mutation. And I've been like cautiously optimistic about it, but it's been a solid like month or two of not just kind of staying steady in the acute period, but like a very noticeable rebound. So just kind of another anecdotal story to throw out there.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Elliot. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. It's such good news. It's always great news, because then I'm like, all right, well, you're going to read me the menu when I see you next. I'm like, perfect.
I love hearing that. Have you done anything since May, like outside of, you know, just your normal day to day?
Yeah, I was working in retail at an REI store when I started having problems and was diagnosed. I quit that shortly after diagnosis, kind of like moved back home for family support. I would say there were a couple of months where I was just extremely like anxious and stressed. Just with all the uncertainty. And then I got in a little more of a routine of just like going for long walks and doing social things when I could. And it's been a different life, like obviously before the vision issues started, and kind of just gave myself some room during that transition period. But I think I've heard the doctors talk a little bit about like exercise, diet, some of that stuff. And it's like, it might help, but it's unclear how much. I think I've been controlling those things decently well, just trying to stay kind of low stress and active and healthy, but hard to say if that's helped or I'm just like very lucky. I'm not sure. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. I don't know if there's answers for some of those questions, I guess.
No, that's awesome.
What mutation are you?
14484.
Okay. I would say, I think you might just be like a very, you might be special. I would say it's spontaneous recovery, and Lisa, jump in and correct me on that specific mutation. But yeah, I think we as a community will just celebrate when spontaneous recovery happens, and we're super pumped for you. And like I said, you're just going to read the menu to me, but so I'm excited for you.
Thanks.
I like your word, cautiously cautious. I'm sorry, say it again for me.
Cautiously optimistic. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And then that's the attitude I've taken the past year out of the 3 years I've been affected. And it keeps a balance, and everything you're doing that I'm learning about and attacking new challenges, going back to my music and to my woodshop and stuff, is that there's always a way to figure something out to do it, but it's the positive attitude and the feelings and waking up saying, okay, what can I do today? How am I going to do it? Makes a difference. It all affects it. So keep it up.
Yeah, it's like Jessica, you asked. I mean, yes, Elliot's right. You know, the 14484 mutation is the one that's more like, everything is individual, and we've got people with all the mutations that have a range of outcomes. So it's completely unpredictable case by case. Statistically speaking, the 14484 mutation does have the more higher chance of a more favorable outcome. I think most people with 11778 or 3460 are going to end up around 2800 when all is said and done. And on average, people with the 14484 mutation are going to end up at 2400 when all is said and done. And, you know, both are legally blind, but one's better than the other. And then I was just communicating with someone earlier today where the family member has 14/44 and okay, their visual acuity is 20/40, but it's through a peephole, right? They have a fenestration in their scotoma. And so if you give them like 5 minutes, they can read, you know, small letters on the wall, but they can't read because it's a small window inside of a big scotoma. So they're still legally blind, even though they can have a good visual acuity. So yeah, 14/44 can be a very complex beast, and you can't sit around hoping you're going to have the good outcome because you may not. But if you do, we celebrate. It's complicated. LH1 is so complicated. but good. We'll good. You're being cautiously optimistic, right? Enjoy it and hope it keeps going in that direction. Awesome.
And it's awkward because like I feel like there's not much advice or any help that I can give other people, but it gives me some confidence. I have a couple of younger brothers who are unaffected. So if they became affected, I would, you know, I'm not quite sure how it works. Nobody is really, but maybe they would have a favorable outcome as well. Not sure.
And even if they didn't, you were doing well when your vision wasn't so good, you were living well too. And so they'd have that to go for. Sorry, someone else was speaking. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to add my older brother has been affected for about 7 or 8 years now, and I'm about 18 months in right now, and I don't know. He had his mutation checked. I think it was the 11778, or if I recall correctly. But yeah, even within the same family, mine, as we've talked about it, is much different than his. It's very odd.
Yeah, I know a few people who they have brothers, and one person's affected, the others aren't yet, and again, it could, you know, hit someone, affect someone at all different ages. So interesting.
We have a younger brother who's not affected currently. So, but I think what you're saying with having other siblings, being able to have someone that's walked down the path and has some groundwork laid and can give you some of that, the benefits of having gone through it has been huge for me.
Totally. No, I totally agree. My brother was affected, but I was the person that paved the way when my aunt got affected, and just kind of having that family or close connection, or honestly jumping on one of these calls and saying like, now how do you do this? Like, what did you guys do next? And just those next steps of having that, at least connection aware. And, honestly, that's the goal of these calls, is just if we can help save you a step, and if we can help say like, hey, this was really helpful, try this instead, and we can save you time, money, all of the above, it's so worth it to be able to provide that gift and we're just giving back because we got it too.
Mm-hmm. And is so weird how family members are not necessarily the same. I know when my second
you just child, look?
Dina, when my
a bottle.
I think we can hear you.
When my second child lost vision, I thought, oh, well, you know, it won't get any worse than her brother's. It'll be fine. And then it was like, worse than her brother's. I'm like, oh, I didn't see that coming. It's like, and you know, her brother has like a small, dense central scotoma, and she's got a large, not as dense scotoma. And he sees colors in the periphery perfectly, and she sees shades of gray everywhere, and it's like, well, I didn't see that being different. And he didn't know what Charles-Bonnet syndrome was other than if I talked about it, and she lives with Charles-Bonnet with the dots, and like, so very different even in the same family. So who knows? Crazy disease.
But I bet we all do like when we go to I just went to my neuro-ophthalmologist a couple of weeks ago, and that word, everything's stable, is a great, great word to hear. But mine's felt like it's gotten a little bit better, but she said that the instruments or the testing that they do, it's not sense enough to notice minute changes or anything. So I'm just grateful that it's stable. So, which has been nice. But I'm the first in my family, the oldest in the family at 61. I have three other siblings, so knock on wood, they have not been affected. We're within a couple of years of each other, the three of us, and it's the same before my kid brother, who's 17 years younger, knock on wood, has been not affected. quick question to everybody out there is I do have, going through family tree, no one else, this is first we've figured this out with who has this or has been identified with LHON. I do have my aunt who has a daughter who has a couple of daughters also, which I assuming they're carriers in this case. And the family dynamics aren't good. They're divorced. My cousin and her husband are divorced quite a few years, but she has medical problems. Is there a way to get to the daughters about, you know, that they're carriers and stuff? How do you do that? How do you spread the information? I've spread it with the immediate family and stuff, but staying away from that side because of the medical issues going on with my cousin and everything there and the divorce. So I don't know. Anybody has an approach?
I'm really new in this group and this whole process, but I might share what I just did with my brother, because obviously I'm a carrier. My son is affected right now. My brother is not affected. He's a heavy drinker. He does a lot of barbecue, you know, all the things that kind of he shouldn't do. But he, you know, I gave him the choice. I said, you know what's going on with my son. And I just said, there's things you can do to mitigate your risk, potentially. If you want to do your own research, you can. If you want me to share it with you, I can do that. But it's your choice. And that's kind of what I did for my brother. And maybe that's an approach you could take.
Thank you.
Yeah, the best thing you can do is just provide information. Like, I'm the oldest male in my family right now, and I'm the first person that we had never heard of this thing up until I saw Dr. Patel at UC Irvine in March. And then my father passed away within a week of that. I hadn't talked to him in years. Not a great guy, but anyways, that led to some stress among some people. He'd been divorced by my mom for 40 years, but back to the point, it led to there's some fracturing in the family. My mom was on a call, with somebody a few months ago who was just, I think it's like a genealogist, something like that. But, she was just providing information. And my mom's crafted a letter and sent it to everybody in the family, like through email, just provide the information, just again, like talk about it. And I saw some of them in July and just talked about the staying away from bonfires and, you know, that's really all you can do. I mean, they can do what they want with the information. You hope that they, do the right thing. I took some of the mitochondria books from the free ones they're handing out at the conference in Cleveland and passed that out to like each, individual family. But, you know, once you do that, it's on them to do what they need to do. But, you know, at least do your part so you know that you've, done what you can do to pass the information along.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Lissa. One thing I'm going to do is I'm putting a link next to the information about this call in the main group. And it's a link to several videos that were created back in 2016. And at the time, I got a grant from Global Genes to do a genealogy project because I had this idea that if everybody would go through their family tree and come back down the family tree and find all of their extended family members who were at risk, we could warn them all and then they could all avoid the genetic factors and we could reduce the incidence of blindness. It seemed pretty simple and faster than trying to find all the people in the world who don't know about LHON and educate them. And what we found was the hardest part of the project was the question Lorenzo asked, like, how do you tell family about the risk? So then I engaged a genetic counselor. And so she created two videos about the topic. Kind of one is about telling family about it. And then the other is an actual video that's like a 3.5 minute video that basically it's like what someone else just mentioned. It's like writing a letter, but it's a video. And it basically says, you know, this is in your family and here's why you might want to know. And here's what you could do. And here's some sources. And one option is sending people to a genetic counselor because genetic counselors are people who are trained to discuss this kind of difficult information. So that's another resource. And like I said, I'll drop these videos in that. I'll put it in the chat box in case anyone can pick it up, but I'll also put it in the Facebook group if it's easier to find there.
Yeah, it would be easier in Facebook. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for, saying that, Lissa. I said genealogist. I don't know if that's something you rub your hand on a lamp or something, but a genetic counselor. That's who my mom, Lynn, spoke to. That was the exact title. It was a genetic counselor who talked about crafting a letter and all that.
Just curious out there. I'm still trying to get my mom to go get tested. Just to confirm, has anyone suggested that their brothers or sisters or mother gets tested, just to confirm, like, who has it and who doesn't? I know it's like almost 100% guaranteed, but we went through this with my sister, same mother. Her first test came back negative, and we're still trying to get her to go get another test. Has anyone else run into this with their family members?
I don't think it's an issue of wanting to get tested. It's financial too.
Right.
Initially, I had to pay for it and had to go after my insurance company, and I have decent insurance in here. And finally got them to pay for it, but it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. So that's the big hindering factor, is that if they're not affected, they weren't going to go through that yet. And, you know, I did make my siblings aware. They're very open. We've always been open to each other. So fortunate that way. And I did share them with them the what to be careful for. Triggers.
This is Lissa. There's a couple of thoughts on that. One is, I don't think cost is necessarily the issue, because once you have one person in the family who's done the expensive test, after that, if you want to have anyone else on the maternal line tested, you can do something that's called a known family variant test. And that's like under $200. I mean, we're talking.
Mm-hmm. That's big.
It's kind of, you know, relatively small. And like, you can even do that test through a company called GeneDx, where you don't even have to pay for a blood draw. You can just get it ordered with GeneDx, and they send a kit, and you do a cheek swab, and then it'll do the confirmatory. There's other issues though that go beyond financial. Where, like, if a person is an unaffected carrier, related to somebody, you know, who's affected, their medical record does not show anything with LHON. And so if they go to get life insurance or long-term care insurance, well, yes, there's going to be nothing in the record about having it. They can act as if they have it, but they some people find that a consideration before they test. So that's one side of it. And then the other side of it, have other people found sort of surprising results? Yes. And that gets into a whole long conversation about why, and heteroplasmy. And, you know, the classic story is it's 100% pass through mother to all children. And in most cases, that's the case. But in some cases, people have multiple copies of mitochondria, and some of the copies are mutated and some are not. And so once that happens, then it's not for sure who has what. So you can go with statistically, it should be a certain way, but we all live with this rare disease and we don't believe in statistics anymore. And so one might wish to test. So yeah, it gets complicated.
With that, real quick, thank you for the info. With that swab one there, is that an official test? Meaning?
Yeah. GeneDx is a certified laboratory of choice. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just, instead of doing a panel or instead of doing the entire mitochondria, which is a costly endeavor, you give them a copy of the test of the family member. So okay, it's known to be in the family that your family is a 1444 and you can prove it by providing a copy of the test of the person who, you know, they know what they're going for. That can be provided with the order for the test for the other person, for the next person. And now they know what they're looking for, and very inexpensive.
Oh, that's good to know. And yeah, I was made aware of when I did this, that I would have issues with insurances and stuff, life insurance and stuff. So,
I mean, you may or may not have issues. I've heard people could have issues, but I can't point to and say, well, you definitely will. I don't know what questions each insurance, you know, will have. It's just, and when it comes to health insurance, it should be that there's a law called GINA, G-I-N-A, and it's like genetic information, something, something. And that's supposed to protect you in terms of having it in your medical record, and it shouldn't impact your health insurance. But that law doesn't affect long-term care insurance. It doesn't affect, so some people, like, if you want to confirm where it goes in your family, like Michelle was talking earlier, okay, this mutation goes up, you know, so many generations in her family, probably no one needs to test because it goes back that far and has so many people affected. But when you just have one, or the 3460 mutation seems to have more heteroplasmy, I would say that casually, not that I can prove it, but yeah, there are exceptions to every rule, especially in this disease.
Well, one thing I did find out with rare genetic diseases is that my first wife who had passed had a thalassemia, which is European hereditary also, which I got tested for. But long as you stayed insured at the time, even though you can switch carriers or jobs, long as you stayed insured, you cannot be denied health insurance if it's a known rare disease or something like that. That's one thing I did learn in the past. So.
Hey, Lisa, could you drop that gene or the low cost thing in the comments? My vision is still better than my short term memory, so I can pass that information along to the rest of my family too.
Yeah, sure, Chris.
Thank you.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, we're a little past. Oh, God.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm fully symptomatic, like I've said before, but I haven't done the gene testing for myself. Like I said, my brother had. Is there a benefit to me going and confirming a gene test? I just kind of figured it is what it is at this point, but is there any pros to going through all of that? I may have missed it in all the back and forth.
This is, less of my opinion is no, there's no reason. You know,
it's kind of what that's the route I was taking. I just didn't know if there was some sort of study that came up, if I needed to have mine confirmed personally.
If a study came up and you needed it confirmed personally, a known family variant test turns around in like a week or two, you would definitely get the answer as fast as you needed it. And if you were trying to enter some trial and you needed to prove you had it, you could enter based on your siblings' results, and they would have to confirm it anyways. So I personally don't think it's going to stand in the way of anything for you. I don't think you need to have it. You know what your brother has. The time where it comes into play, like Zach was asking, is when somebody's an unaffected, when somebody is likely to be an unaffected carrier based on the maternal bloodline. That's when it comes into question. Like, you know, well, you think you're an unaffected carrier based on the maternal bloodline, but if the mother had a heteroplasmy, meaning she had some percentage of mutated mitochondria and some percentage of non-mutated, well, then she could have passed on unmutated mitochondria to one or more of her children. And if you don't know whether you're heteroplasmic or homoplasmic, if you don't know whether all of your mitochondria are mutated or not, or the mother, like if a woman is tested and she has 100% mutated mitochondria, all of her children will have the same. She only had mutated mitochondria to give. That's all she gave. Mm-hmm. But the other way.
So can I ask a clarifying question? Because we haven't met with our genetic counselor yet.
Yeah.
But we got the results and he is homoplastic. So does that mean his siblings are as well?
So it doesn't. So the odds are good, but it's not for sure. If you wanted to know for sure and you got tested, it would then be in your record.
Need to get long-term care insurance first.
Okay. So then wait and get your long-term care insurance set up if you choose to do it. But then same thing for your kids. Do they really want to get tested either? So that, and again, given that he's homoplasmic, the odds are good, but it's not for sure. If you tested homoplasmic, then it would be sure that all your kids were. But if you're not tested, then you don't know for sure about them. The odds are good, but you don't know for sure. You could be 50-50, right? You could be 50% one and 50% the other, mutated, non-mutated. And this particular child happened to get all the bad ones. It's just that this disease has been around so long in most cases. The odds are really good that if your child was homoplasmic mutated, you probably are, the siblings probably are, but there's a chance. But yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With that, I mean, that's the first I've heard about the two different variants there, homoplastic, is with the one I have, the 11778 there, does that designate which one it is or no?
No. It's two different concepts. One concept is where on the mitochondria is the mutation that you have. And the most common one is at a point called 11778. That's the mutation most of us have if we have it. 14484 is 17% of us, and 3460 is about 13% of us. And then there's like a whole bunch of rare ones. So that's a different mutation. Then for any of those mutations, we have multiple copies. And most people are 100% mutated. If you've become affected, if someone in the family's become affected, in most cases, it's 100% all the copies of the mitochondria have the mutation. But in some situations, you can have multiple copies, and some copies are correct and some copies are mutated. And if that's the case, then the woman could have passed all of one, all of the other, or a mix to her children. It's complicated.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking back. My mother is 85, and if she was to get tested, then we'd find out what the possibilities for my sibling without them getting tested, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If your mom tested and she happened to be 100% homoplasmic with the same mutation you have, then nobody else on that maternal line going down has to test, don't have to have it in their record. And she's done a service to the family. That's true.
And they could probably have that swab test done for her?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. All right. That's a good way.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Wow. And you know how to find me if you have questions when you're digging into it.
I do. Thank you again for everything.
Yep.
Love this. Any follow-up questions on that? If not, I'm going to wrap us up here. Whew, okay, that was awesome. I feel so much more informed, and I've been affected for 12 years. Every single time, I swear, I promise all everyone that's new to our LA Twin family, you learn something new every day. So hang in with us. But I think we will turn off the recording now, but the call's not over. So if you do have questions you want to ask, not on the recording, this is the perfect time. So we'll turn off the recording quick, if you don't mind, for us, Lisa.
Yep, just a sec. Let me find that again.